Hey folks, you're listening to the audio version of the American Watchmen Roundtable podcast. But did you know you can watch us on YouTube live as well? That's right, every Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, you too can join in on the fun. Just go to our website, AmericanWatchmen.org, and click on the YouTube icon, and we redirected to our channel. From there, you can subscribe to our channel to receive updates as to when we're doing this podcast live, and then you can participate every Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time by participating in our chat room. We hope to see you there in future episodes, and of course, you'll always be getting the audio podcast episodes as well if you subscribe. We appreciate your support. And with that in mind, let's begin the show. Thank you. Folks, welcome to the American Watchmen Roundtable podcast, the weekly podcast from American Watchmen, where the editors at large discuss all the hot political topics of the week. I'm one of your hosts, Sam Whitfield, and I'm one of the editors at large here at American Watchmen.
Was that my cue, or?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. I guess I will introduce myself next. I'm Joshua Johnson. I am a co-founder and editor at American Watchmen as well. I'll pass it on to Adam.
I'm Adam. I'm also a co-founder and editor at American Watchmen. I am a constitutional conservative based out of Colorado. And the two issues I'm most passionate about are free speech and Second Amendment.
And last but not least, Gabe, you're up.
I'm Gabe. I'm the co-founder of, or one of the co-founders of American Watchmen.
And for those who are watching on YouTube, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to say that that's not a stuffed animal. That's Gabe's actual dog in the profile picture. So we don't need PETA coming after us or writing out angry letters that, you know, Gabe has like a stuffed, you know, I guess taxidermy dog. No, that's his actual dog. So just putting a disclaimer out here. So last week when we launched the podcast, I was the one who hosted. So this week, Josh is hosting the podcast. So Josh, I guess I'll just sit back and let you take over. What are we discussing this week? And I'll just let you kind of take over the show from here.
Justice Kennedy has died. No, actually, he just retired. But, he might as well have. Because now President Trump gets to go ahead and name a new Supreme Court justice. I don't think I need to explain to anybody who is listening to a political podcast why or how this is such a major issue. So I'm just going to get right into the meat and the bones of it, if you will, and start by discussing the ramifications of Justice Kennedy's retirement. And because it is an election year, I think I'm going to go ahead and ask my first question specifically to Gabe. Does this hurt the Republican Party going into the midterm elections, or does it help us, or does it hurt the Democrats, or what does it do in terms of the impact on the elections before we get into the discussion on policy and rulings going forward?
Well, shameless plug, I wrote an article on this on American Watchmen the other day. But I think it helps Republicans more than hurts them, because one of the things I think that motivates Republicans more than Democrats is the prospect of a Supreme Court justice. In fact, if you look at exit polls from 2016, you'll find that more Republicans voted for Trump over a Supreme Court justice pick, with Merrick Garland being blocked at the time, versus Democrats voting for Hillary Clinton over the same issue. So I think it at a time when the GOP is kind of divided over things like immigration and trade between their sort of intellectual elitist wing versus their more blue collar downscale wing, I think it unites the party more, because they all tend to believe that, you know, they want judges who will not legislate from the bench. So I think all in all, it helps them. How much it helps them, you know, in 4 or 5 months remains to be seen.
Does anybody else have anything to comment? I would generally agree with Gabe's analysis. I think it's going to motivate Republicans to, even though it's likely that we're probably going to get the replacement before the November election, before the next Congress is sworn in, I think it'll motivate Republicans to get out and vote anyway, because odds are, I don't like to ever predict that somebody's going to die, but I don't think Ginsburg is going to be around until 2020. You could all say it's politically incorrect to say it, but come on. I think we're going to get another Supreme Court seat before the 2020 election. I'm just going to put it out there.
Well,
and, not that I'm going to, not that I'm saying I hope anything bad happens.
No,
I don't.
That does bring up a good question, Josh. I mean, about why, and maybe you were going to ask this, I don't know, about why Kennedy chose this moment to retire and why Ginsburg hasn't retired yet.
Well, I think the reason she probably hasn't retired is because she's a stone cold social justice warrior. Huh?
Right, exactly. So she's not going to retire in the age of Trump. So the only way she's going to get off the bench is going 6 feet under. I mean,
this got pretty morbid pretty fast.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was that not politically correct?
When I started off by saying a man was dead. going forward then into rulings, and I will confess for our listeners, I'm more of a foreign policy and social issues guy, so I don't have too much to terribly say about this, so I'm going to try and keep the conversation flowing amongst our other hosts. But is this the end of the world as we know it for the progressive left? Is gay marriage going to be banned tomorrow? And abortion going to be banned? And are we going to be having slavery brought back anytime soon, Gabe? What's going on, or Adam, or anybody?
Well, I was just going to jump in here a moment ago and say, you know, that I'm kind of, you know, Josh is the, you know, foreign policy and social issues wonk. I'm kind of the media and pop cultural, you know, wonk when it comes to how politics is affected by culture. And man, from some of the tweets I've seen this week from the left, you would think that, you know, Kennedy stepped down and that literally Adolf Hitler himself is being nominated to the to the bench. I mean. We
don't even know who the nominee is yet. That's the funny part. Just imagine when Trump comes out and actually names somebody, then they'll really lose their minds.
Well, I think one of the funniest thing, and this is actually something that I was going to bring up later in the podcast, but I think I might as well bring it up now. Ben Shapiro has, you know, tweeted at Trump that he would be happy to, you know, to be nominated. Now, I think what's funny is on our side, there are a lot of people who, you know, who are actually in favor of that. I'm not so sure I am, but aside from all that, I think it's a big troll, you know, that he's doing to both the hard left and the alt right, because I saw a tweet and I wish I had saved it, like screenshotted it, but it was something from like one of the HuffPo writers, like, oh God, please don't nominate him. He's literally Hitler. So, and you know,
Brandon, well, I think they can say that about any candidate, even if it is a more serious one.
But the irony is, Josh, is they're saying that about, you know, Ben Shapiro, who is literally the most Jewish guy that you could get to, you know, be on the Supreme Court. I think. I mean, I've never
I find it interesting that the left is going nuts about this when they think that a bunch of originalist judges are going to completely overturn precedent. Because think about it, for whoever is selected, five justices have to completely overturn long-held precedents, which the current Supreme Court has sort of done and sort of has been hesitant to do. They're going nuts over the possibility of the court overturning Roe v. Wade or overturning gay marriage isn't really based off what the court has done, other than one or two big decisions that they didn't like.
Yeah, on a more serious, Gabe, and Josh, I apologize if this was one of your questions, but on a more serious subject, you know, one of the big fears I've seen from the left, kind of, you know, being the watchdog person of American Watchmen, you know, from the left, is they seem to be, all of the columns I've seen from the left and all of the tweets are pretty much all centered around, you know, their big fear of that they're going to get rid of Roe v. Wade. And what really strikes me about, you know, that as interesting is Trump really hasn't said that much about Roe v. Wade as president, as far as I can tell. And, you know, that doesn't really seem to be in his wheelhouse. And I don't think any, like, I haven't heard Gorsuch or anything, you know, or any of the other conservative judges say that. So I'm curious as to why they're so worried about Roe v. Wade being overturned specifically.
To address kind of both of Gabe's original points about he didn't understand why they were freaking out so much about the prospect of justices reversing precedent when it's not likely that they would, and to what you just said about why they're so worried about Roe v. Wade being overturned, is because you have to look at, you know, it's a question, and I know I harp on this all the time, but it's a question of worldview. If you are a progressive, then your view of history is that it is a straight line and that it is always advancing in your column, that things can never go back, i.e. Roe v. Wade can never be overturned. And more importantly, the reason they freak out so much and they say they're worried about things being overturned is because it doesn't matter if the justices, in their minds, it doesn't matter if the justices actually overturn anything or reverse anything, although they would be very upset about that. What their whole worldview, you know, if these originalist justices come on the court and say that, you know, let's, right now their pet case, their pet issue is getting rid of ICE. So let's say that, you know, they tried to do that, and then the Supreme Court said, no, you don't have the power. I know it's a ridiculous example, but bear with me. If the court then said no, if a court of originalist justices then said, no, we're gonna say that this agency's allowed to exist, it would totally shatter their worldview, because history would, in their eyes anyway, stop progressing, because they think that they're always right. Theirs is the only way. So if you have originalist justices who may in the future block them from continuing to radically socially re-engineer the country, then to them, that's just as bad as overturning something, because it shatters their narrative view of history.
I think that's a pretty good answer. Sorry, I was tweeting our link out to some of the social media.
Playing on your phone and not listening.
I think you're right. Maybe in the broad scale, Josh. If you look at their party now, it's centered around the issues that they're most worried about. So gay marriage and pro-choice, religious liberty and things of that nature. Their party is basically a bunch of interest groups that are kind of brought together over identity issues. They're either worried about those broad major overturns of precedent, or they're worried about death by a thousand cuts. On the social issues that Anthony Kennedy actually agreed with them on more often than not. They know, I mean, let's be honest here. Anthony Kennedy is not a liberal in any sense of the imagination. But on social issues, he certainly was no John Roberts or Alito or Thomas. And he wouldn't really move the needle to the right in the way that they're now worried about it going. I mean, in terms of pro-choice abortion issues, that you can look at it two ways. You can look at it as we're worried about they're going to completely overturn it, or it's going to be death by a thousand cuts, because the way the pro-life movement has gone forward in the last several years is they basically probed at Roe v. Wade through new regulations on abortion clinics, through trying to defund Planned Parenthood. And I think to the left, the Supreme Court ratifying any of those actions by any of those states, predominantly run by Republican governors, is just as bad to them and just as dangerous a precedent as Roe v. Wade being completely overturned. Because what you can do is you can basically make a prior precedent toothless if you basically have enough rulings over other issues that make it toothless. So you can have Roe v. Wade that says abortion is legal at 6 months, but if there's no Planned Parenthood clinic in your state, the odds are very likely that you don't have access to an abortion.
Right. No, I personally get you. And look, on my own podcast, the Whitfield Report, I've kind of said the same thing. I personally don't think that they're going to overturn Roe v. Wade. I don't think that necessarily conservatives will have to. I think, you know, as you said, the stronger that the pro-life movement seems to get, you know, with like, you know, video exposés, you know, that Project Veritas did a few years ago, I think that more and more people are waking up to, you know, kind of the negative side of abortion. And, you know, like you said, legislatively too, I don't think that the Supreme Court is going to, you know, completely repeal Roe v. Wade. I think it would be like a big symbolic win for the, you know, pro-life movement if they did. But realistically, I don't see that happening. So,
to clarify for our listeners, I personally don't think that we're going to see Roe v. Wade overturned, and that's just because I don't have much faith in our political system in general, put it that way. And but I would totally be in favor of trashing the presidents and just overturning the whole thing. But I also see Gabe's point and think that that's a viable option that pro-lifers need to be aware of as well. The death by a thousand, you know, killing off the abortion industry by a thousand cuts, as opposed to one big guillotine, shall we say.
Which, as I just mentioned a moment ago, is kind of what's already been happening over the past, you know, few years. So,
yes and no. I mean, keep in mind that Kennedy ruled that the Texas abortion rules were illegal, which essentially was that trying to defang Roe v. Wade by making it harder for there to be Planned Parenthood clinics in the state, and Kennedy sided with the court's liberals. So, I mean, that there is that. It's been done legislatively, but at the judicial level is where it's gotten stymied a lot. You know, Texas, in 2016 being the most obvious example.
Right. Well, and I wasn't even talking about, you know, legislatively or, you know, legally. I was talking more about, like, through organizations like, you know, Live Action and Project Veritas, who have done exposés on Planned Parenthood. So, but we're here to talk about court issues. So, you know, I don't want to get too sidetracked, but I'm just saying. Josh, kind of throwing it back to you. So,
I was kind of hoping you'd keep on going with the the questions. I do want to give Adam a chance to say something. You've been pretty silent so far, buddy. You got anything to add into any of this conversation, or?
I got plenty. I was listening to you guys talking, waiting for a spot for me to hop in there.
Jump in, man. It's all yours. So,
you know, I definitely agree. You can't really. I don't see Roe v. Wade ever being overturned. Like, maybe far in the future, maybe, but maybe not. Something I do see, there was a one of the more recent abortion precedents was Planned Parenthood of Southeastern Pennsylvania versus Casey, which basically the Supreme Court of the United States ruled that it was unconstitutional for a minor to let their parents know or before they had an abortion, and also made it unconstitutional for a spouse to have to let their husband know if they wanted to have an abortion in marriage. Now, while Roe v. Wade, I don't see getting overturned, I do see the possibility of Planned Parenthood versus Casey being overturned. That seems like a more of a possibility. And again, that's something else that kind of goes in towards Gabe's talking about death by a thousand cuts, you know, just by little rulings here and there that affect it without actually completely outlawing abortion. I also do see the potential. Something I would like to see is if they can't do it on the federal level, maybe they just give complete control over this issue back to the states and let each individual state decide what they want to do with that.
I would personally agree with that, Adam. And I mean, as I've said, I would have rather, you know, again, I wasn't around, no one here was around back in, you know, 69 when, or the 60s when it became, a legitimate verdict. But I would rather that was how the whole abortion thing, you know, went from the beginning, was to have be a states' rights issue. So, but that's just me. So.
Just want to throw out a few little facts for our listeners, since we've sort of moved into to discussing Planned Parenthood, especially for any young women who may be listening who may not be aware that there are alternatives to going to Planned Parenthood. There are actually more than 13,000 federally qualified health centers across the nation in comparison to Planned Parenthood, which only has 669. Most of which prioritize abortion and birth control, not actual women's health issues. Moving on with a next question, though. And this one's, again, I'm going to be sorry, Gabe. I based most of my questions off of your article. So we don't need a lot of free advertising tonight.
I'll take it.
I personally do not think this will happen. But, you know, it's a possibility because I've sort of, it's a slim possibility, but I've sort of seen it within my own Republican Party here in the state of Nebraska. But do you think that when Trump names a new nominee for the court, but let's be honest, they're going to be a justice anyway, probably. Do you think that there is a risk at all of it causing a divide within the Republican Party between what you mentioned as being the more, shall we say, libertarian-minded wing of the party and the more national conservative or populist wing of the party? Because I Justice Kennedy, as we sort of discussed, was he was a libertarian-ish. You know, he leaned to the right on economic issues, and then he would often side with the court's leftists on some social issues. And that he, being a Reagan appointee, that was more of sort of a Reagan type of conservatism, it would seem. Do you think, and I've seen here in Nebraska, we've had some people particularly my own state senator, unfortunately, who chose to leave the Republican Party because she didn't feel like it was Reagan's party anymore. And quite frankly, I was never a fan of Reagan anyway, so I don't care. But is there a risk of that kind of, is there a risk of Trump's nominee potentially causing a split in the party, or is there not? I personally don't think so, because I think the party is pretty much solidified around Trump and his vision, but.
Well, I would say
my
no.
My question make any sense? That's the first one.
I mean, I would say as I was just kind of waiting for Gabe to answer first.
Well, you can take it, Sam, or I can take it first. It doesn't matter to me. Or I'll just say real quick. I think in terms of the Supreme Court, the beauty of having a Supreme Court vacancy is all the intellectual elites, the conservatives, you know, in at the New York Times, whatever, this is the one thing that will actually get them behind Trump for any prolonged period of time is the Supreme Court. If you're a blue collar person in Pennsylvania who voted for Trump, you're on the Trump train pretty much no matter what he does. It's getting those intellectual elites in the party behind Trump on something right up before the midterm. And a Supreme Court vacancy, I think, is the one thing that will. So whereas I don't think anybody who likes Trump, who's a populist, is going to walk away from Trump because he chooses a conservative nominee, I think that the intellectual elites, the never Trumpers who have been the most resistant to Trump, this is the one thing that will actually make them support Trump. Is it our judicial vacancies?
I would pretty much echo what Josh would say too. Although in the case of National Review, and even more specifically with Jonah Goldberg, you know, who I you know, most of my listeners know, I really have a strong, you know, distaste for Jonah Goldberg. I don't think anything is going to bring him over to the. You know.
Well, some of them, to cite a recent example, some of them, and I know he backed down already because even though his name is already mud, he didn't want to apparently light the burning, dirty diaper that is his political legacy on fire even more. But Senator Flake briefly threatened to actually hold Trump's nominee up because he wanted to force a vote on the president's trade policies, and then he backed down. But and then to Sam's point also, I've seen my fair share of the National Review crowd. I've seen a woman who fired us from Red Millennial, who I shall not name, also basically say that no matter who Trump picks, she's going to oppose it. This is a small group of as I would call them, people from the political class who don't actually have the numbers in the party or whatever. Examples of.
But Josh, think about it this way, though. Do you think that Jeff Flake or John McCain or anybody else, when it comes to actually cementing their ideology on the Supreme Court, would say no simply over the fact they don't like Trump?
That depends. I know there's a list. I don't know who's on the list. I haven't seen it. I haven't done my homework on this, unfortunately. Okay. But,
yeah, I got a couple names.
Pardon?
I got a couple of names of a front runner list that New York Times put out, and it actually coincides with a couple other media outlets list as well. So it looks like it could be legit.
So they do have the list out. I knew that, but I'm not sure who's on it. Depending on who he picks from that list, and I can't say because I don't know even who's on the list. Would their ideology be solidified or what kind of, I mean, does it depend on the person he nominates or?
Well, I guess kind of here's what I was going to say about that. Here was kind of my second point to my earlier comment was, it seemed kind of strange to me that we're talking about, will the party be divided over this? Because if you remember a little over a year ago now, just over a year ago now, we were kind of at the same point, if you remember, with the whole, you know, vacancy when, you know, Scalia died, and then you know, Trump ended up nominating Neil Gorsuch. And, you know, I think there was a whole it wasn't Scalia that passed for that, but, you know, but kind of the same scenario. There was a vacancy and Trump ended up filling it with, you know, Gorsuch, and everything and everyone in the party was kind of, you know, was thrilled, more or less. Even the never Trumpers had to give him credit then. So
I think you're slightly confused, because Trump's only made one appointment to the court so far. That was Gorsuch, and that was to fill Scalia's seat. This is his second one now. A lot of never Trumpers did come around afterwards on the Gorsuch deal. They didn't do it at the time, but in retrospect.
To Sam's point, it was that picking that kind of nominee that nobody, no matter what their feelings in the party were, opposed it. That's what I mean. Like it's the one thing, if Trump picks a conservative nominee, that will unite anybody in the party. And by the party, I really mean in terms of getting them on the Supreme Court, the Senate. It's the one thing that get them on board with all voting yes. I mean, we're talking in terms of like the logistics of this. We're all talking about the never Trumpers and the elites who might say no to Trump. Ironically, it's really only two or three senators in the Senate who would vote no on Trump's nominee, either Susan Collins or Lisa Murkowski, and that would revolve around the issue of abortion and Roe v. Wade.
There's something I could say about both of those two right now, but I'm going to hold my tongue.
I think that we're kind of on the same page then, Gabe. I don't.
Maybe I phrased the question wrong in the first place. Here, maybe let me refine it a little bit. Are those people that are never Trumpers in the party in the Senate GOP, the congressional GOP, are they going to be upset if the nominee is not somebody who is ideologically similar to Kennedy? That maybe that's a little bit better phrasing of it, because or another way, are we at risk of them trying to force Trump to appoint somebody who is going to be socially a bit more to the left? Gabe?
No.
I would say no along with Gabe. I would only add the caveat too that even if they did try, though, I don't think it would really matter. I mean, the actual never Trumpers in the Senate and in, you know, the House are so minuscule at this point that they don't have any influence, you know, in the party really. So even if they did try to, you know, do something, I don't think it would really do anything at this point, except for, you know, cause the usual Twitter mob to, you know, make memes of them and whatnot. That's pretty much all that would happen.
And it's likely that whatever nominee Trump picks will force them basically to choose between their ideological pinnings and their disliking of Trump, because you have to think about like the network now that's in place among think tanks, conservative nonprofits, to get conservative justices, not just on the Supreme Court, but all the appellate courts. I mean, Mitch McConnell has said that his greatest legacy under Trump will be the number of justices he puts on all these appellate courts that are really conservative. And that wouldn't happen if all Trump had would say 5 or 10 names and he just randomly picked them. There are millions of dollars behind pushing conservative, ideologically conservative justices onto these courts, the same way that the left created a network to get progressives onto all these courts. So it's really unlikely that we're going to see Trump pick somebody like a Harriet Myers, which is about as bad a nominee as you can pick for being a Republican president.
So in other words, what you're saying is, like, you know, I guess if I'm understanding correctly, Gabe, like, keep an eye on the Heritage Foundation's website, or
Right. Well, you guys remember that during the campaign, Trump came up with that list of justices he would appoint to the Supreme Court if elected to replace Merrick Garland.
I remember it existing, but I never read it or anything.
Well, that's one of the lists that he chose Gorsuch from.
Oh.
So, and that list his campaign didn't come up with on its own. It came from organizations like the Heritage Foundation that gave him these names. And from that list, he's actually chosen some of his appellate court nominees that now sit on those courts. So, you know, he's not going to pick somebody who's going to be ideologically somebody that Never Trumpers can oppose. I think the real threat isn't so much that Never Trumpers like Jeff Flake or John McCain or anybody else in the Senate says no. I think the real danger is that he picks somebody who is so over the top in terms of making clear how much they dislike Roe v. Wade or the Civil Rights Act or anything like that, that they actually manage to unite the Democratic caucus and they're able to peel away a Murkowski, a Collins, or a McCain over something like abortion.
So this brings me to my next question, Gabe. I don't think to get you there. I don't think this is likely either. Because as I understand it, the rules now require a simple majority, thanks to Harry Reid, of course, for us to put on the Supreme Court. But is there a risk that Chuck Schumer can do anything other than spit on Harry Reid's photo on his desk for the rest of his time as minority leader? Is there any parliamentary trick he can pull to try and stop us, or is resistance futile for them?
Well, he can slow it down through parliamentary procedure, but he can't stop it if he doesn't have the votes to stop it. Because unlike the appellate courts where you're trying to, say, stalk 20 nominees on 20 different courts, this is just one nominee. So you only have to have one or two Senate hearings, and then you only have to have one total vote in the Senate. So if he doesn't have the votes to kill whoever the nominee is, he can't stop it. And he knows that. I mean, he's admitted that. That's why the left is going nuts, because they know that they can't stop it. There literally is no way for them to stop it legislatively.
So here is the follow-up question to that then. Because I know a lot of the media and the focus in the media lately and on both even mainstream, surprisingly, has been just how out there a lot of the left has become in terms of basically openly hinting or outright stating violence as an option for them. Some of them even going so far as to say that they need to get rid of the Supreme Court entirely, like they did with the Electoral College after Trump won. When we get our justice appointed or confirmed, what can we expect from the left? Will they go even crazier? Are we talking 1968 levels rioting in the street, crazy woman screaming into the sky at the inauguration? What are we?
Well, I suppose as the, as kind of the culture watch guy, I should maybe feel that question at first, and boy, I don't know, because I feel like sometimes, you know, sometimes the left surprises me. They you know, they threaten to do that whole like scream at the sky day or something where they actually planned out and then literally nothing happened.
I don't know if you saw it, but there was actually and thank God it was censored. But I saw on Facebook there were some feminist protesters who went out and screamed. They were screaming against Trump through their vaginas or something like that. And it was essentially a bunch of incredibly just bad. Just standing without any pants on, screaming at pictures of Trump in a room and thrusting their crotches at the screen.
I saw that story. I think from what I remember, that actually happened shortly after Trump took office, after his inauguration. Yeah, it was complete insanity.
So
I thought that was an Onion video, to be fair. The first
one. It was not fake.
No, I know. I know that now. Like when I first saw that, I'm like, there's no way. But no,
Just in terms of protests, though. I mean, are we going to see sort of like after Trump was elected, there were a whole bunch of leftists outside of the they were protesting against Harry Schumer, saying, "Oh, the Democratic Party is not doing enough for the resistance movement. They're not being left wing enough. They're not being progressive enough." Is there a risk that after Schumer, because he literally can do nothing to stop us, is there a chance that his base is going to lose their marbles and demand the party go even further to the left? Are they going to say, well, the leadership's not doing enough to resist Gabe, or are they going to be wildly irrational? I mean, that's what I'm.
Well, no, I mean, but I think that's already happening regardless of what happens with this pick. I mean, I think regardless of what happens with the Supreme Court, the left is already going nuts. I mean, they've already made it clear they're moving to the left and they're going there fast.
Yeah.
That gets into like Joe Crowley being defeated by a self-avowed democratic socialist. I mean, I don't know, short of coming out and saying you're an actual socialist, how far left you can get and how far left your base is when they knock out a possible successor to Nancy Pelosi is leading the party and go with a 28-year-old democratic socialist. So I think they're going there either way. Whether this pick or this situation makes them get there faster, almost strikes me as semantics and something you can't measure, because I think they're already going there.
Yeah, I would just kind of say the same thing as Gabe. I think they're already there. You know, shameless plug. I've kind of been doing this whole thing of, you know, watching how far the cultural left has gone on my own podcast, the Whitfield Report, and just to kind of, you know, sum up, basically, I think the left is a few, you know, hairs short of going of literally going into full on purge mode. And you know, for any of you who know what those movies are, maybe, you know, you probably know what I'm talking about. But yeah, I think
the last thing I ever want to see before I die is somebody coming at me with a Hillary Clinton rubber mask on with a butcher knife. That's just horrifying. Don't give me that bit. Don't give me that.
I'm not worried about that. I'm packing all the time, pretty much. So.
Yeah. If we ever go to purge levels, I'm moving in with Adam. So, but and to that end, Adam, you had something to say to Josh's question. So,
Like honestly, so. I definitely agree with some of what you guys had to say there, but I'm actually gonna go the other way here. I think it's gonna get much worse. And so my reasoning with that is things didn't get a lot worse after Gorsuch was confirmed. I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on there, and you know, there's some craziness going on after confirmed, but not a lot. The reason I'm seeing things taking a drastic turn after this confirmation is because, you know, to the left, abortion has been their sacred right since Roe v. Wade. And now in their eyes, maybe not in our eyes, because we're more realists, we're not complete pessimistic fear mongers like the left is being right now. But in the left's eyes, they see us taking away one of their most sacred rights that they've had since Roe versus Wade. So I think that could potentially accelerate the free fall of the left. I think things could get much worse, no matter who Trump appoints, because they know that with that conservative majority, that there is that possibility in their eyes of their precious right to kill unborn babies being taken away.
Gabe mentioned the New York Democratic primary, and I forget her name. But the Democratic Socialist, quote unquote, that won there. I don't want to say too much on this, but I do want to maybe pitch a future episode idea in front of our listeners to you all here, because I know if I pitch it in front of the listeners, you'll all be forced to do it at some point with me. But I think part of the rage we're seeing from the left, and then also just the internal debates going on the right, I do think we're seeing a political realignment. And I think part of that is driven by the fact that, as we mentioned a little bit last time, people throw words around without actually knowing what they mean. And you know, to the point of the young socialist woman, yeah, some of her policies are generally in that area, but then also she's like in favor of abolishing ICE and having open borders. And I can tell you flatly that many older school socialists at least would beg to differ with her on that. But I maybe for the future we could have, because it does tie into the Supreme Court. You know, we are living in a time of great political change. Maybe something on changing definitions and realigning ideologies or something. I don't know, but that's my spiel. Gabe knows that I basically fantasize about talking about that all the time. So I dream it even. if nobody has any comments, then I've run through all of my concerns with this decision. As I mentioned before, I'm not too big on the judicial issues or anything. But to Sam or Gabe or Adam, do you have anything to add? Or we're getting close to the hour mark on this, but maybe we've pulled it all the way through. I'm not sure.
Gentlemen, do either of you have anything to say?
I had something, but it kind of escaped me right as you guys started talking about it.
Okay. If it comes back, just let us know. Listen, I'll just kind of say this. I think that, you know, Trump, based on the whole, nomination of Gorsuch, I think that was a pretty... that was a pretty good pick. I think everyone here can pretty much agree. So Trump already has a good track record. I don't want to say that he's going to pick another good one for sure. I'm not that confident. I think we would need to see who he picks first, and then, you know, judge them based on their performance. Just like we did with Gorsuch. But I think, you know, based on the past, things are looking pretty good. I think that, you know, the left is going to come unhinged because of this, maybe not directly because of this decision, but I think it's going to add up to things. And
I think they became unhinged a long time ago.
I think they're just going to progress, you know, down the rabbit hole, if you'll pardon the term progressive, or I guess regress, as Dave Rubin likes to say. And not really to, I know this is kind of going into election territory, which, Gabe, I know I'm kind of encroaching into your territory now, so I'm sorry about that, but it seems to me that kind of that the Democrats' primary thing in this primary election is all about promising to impeach Trump and then to reverse some of these SCOTUS decisions too.
So they did introduce a bill. They did introduce, I saw Schumer introduced a bill, and this ties into my whole realigning deal, but they did introduce a bill to try and legalize marijuana at the federal level as well, which I think is a desperate shot by them to, you know, if they know Republican voters are going to be energized by the Supreme Court, then I think they're figuring they can get all of their voter. You know, I think they're going to try and motivate their voters with the promise of legalized marijuana. Maybe the libertarians will jump at that. I don't know.
But, well, so let me take this, because I mean, there are many more directions we could go with this. So I'm interested in all your guys' take, and Josh, I know I'm sort of stealing your thunder as the moderator. But where do you guys think that this is going to take the court in the next few years? I mean, my take on it, depending on who who Trump nominates is he's going to nominate somebody who's more conservative than Kennedy and more conservative than Roberts. And Roberts is actually going to become the swing vote. So, I mean, where do you guys see that taking the Supreme Court in the next few years beyond just Roe v. Wade? Because I know we've talked a lot about Roe v. Wade, but there are things like religious liberties, First Amendment rights, fair housing, disparate impact rules, you know, all things that Kennedy was kind of left on those sorts of issues. Where do you see that taking the court now, considering that Roberts is actually probably going to be the swing vote on that court and considering where his ideological leanings are?
I actually I foresee a lot of actual Second Amendment rulings coming through the courts over the next couple of years, because there's a lot of federal stuff that has been enacted, especially since the National Firearm Act was passed, and you know, the Brady Bill and all that kind of stuff. I think you're going to see a lot more Second Amendment stuff coming through the Supreme Court.
I look to see a lot more in terms of religious liberty. I have noticed, and I've sort of said this before, that on their recent ruling regarding the, I forget the name of the Colorado, what was the name of that Colorado bakery?
I was actually just talking about this, Masterpiece Cake.
Masterpiece.
On the Masterpiece Cake ruling, I had said that they left it a little bit open-ended, and I don't know if I told it to you guys or if I said it to somebody else I was discussing it with. But I said I felt that the reason that the court chose to be as open-ended as they were on the decision is because they might have a sense that the balance of power is sort of shifting on this, and they didn't want to land on the wrong side of that. Mm-hmm. I look in the next couple of years to see more cases that are friendly to religious business owners and to those who are interested in actively and faithfully living out their faith without having to be afraid of discrimination.
Did I tell you guys?
I do think there is one interesting downside that there could be to this, and I did see this already in a piece on the American Conservative, is that you might start seeing, in the example the American Conservative used, a extremely left-wing college decides to fire a member of the faculty. How many of these there are, I don't know, but I would guess it's pretty rare. But the member of this faculty at a college held conservative views on the issue of family and sex and marriage, and he was fired by the college's board of directors or governors or however that works, and their reasoning was, well, we're a private college, and if a cake shop can go ahead and do that, then we're going to go ahead and we're going to refuse to serve or deal with conservatives or Christians. And I think that's one negative implication maybe, but we'll see where that goes. I hope that Rod Dreher's piece on that was wrong, but
I was just going to say, I think I might have mentioned this, but I actually met the guy who owns and runs Masterpiece Cakes back when I was in Denver over this Christmas. What's interesting about that case, and it's something that the media on both ends, both the left and the right, kind of ignored, was that Jack, the guy who runs the shop, he offered to sell that couple a cake based on what they already had in the store. He just wasn't going to build a custom-made cake because, you know, it violated his rights. But he did offer to sell them, you know, something. So I think based on that part of it, I think it was pretty good that the Supreme Court kind of left it open-ended the way they did. In regards to the types of cases that we're going to see in the future from the Supreme Court, you know, Josh said that we're going to be seeing a lot of religious liberty cases, which I think is true. I also think, based on reading Milo's website and Roger Stone's website and that we're going to be seeing a lot of free speech cases before the Supreme Court, actually. You know, more specific with, like, you know, Facebook and Twitter censoring conservative, you know, commentators and, you know, YouTube and all that. And, you know, can corporations actually do that under the First Amendment? I mean, we're already seeing some of that happen at the senatorial level with all these hearings. But I think eventually, as one of Milo's writers said, like, 2 or 3 weeks ago on his website, I think we're going to see that, to see those types of cases in the Supreme Court eventually. And so,
you know, that does give me an idea, but I'm not sure if the Supreme Court, given that the majority of the nominees that Trump has in his pool to pick from are people provided by the Heritage Foundation, since they're economic liberals, I don't know how these nominees would rule on this, but given Trump's particular hatred for Jeff Bezos, I could see some maybe some good old-fashioned trust-busting cases against some of these. I would certainly favor it, because I've said for years that some of these damn tech Silicon Valley companies need to be broken up. But
I don't think the way the court is structured, the court would do that, though. They'd probably kick it to Congress and say, you guys bust them, or you create rules or laws that do it.
No, that's because Trump's potential nominees are, I'm guessing, if they're from Heritage, they're all probably neoliberals. So I don't know how they would do on that, but...
I think that's an interesting take, but I think you're looking at it, Josh, through a different, I think you're looking at it through a different perspective than I am. I generally look at the court cases and judicial nominees through the lens of conservative versus liberal as opposed to economically, because you and I have had this conversation in the past. I view it more as judges, as are they more libertarian leaning, more conservative leaning, progressive leaning. And I know that pertains to, like, economic policy and things like trust busting, but I tend to see that the rulings and how they're made in a different perspective, which is ultimately why I say I don't think we would see very many trust busting cases. But I wouldn't necessarily say that's because they're neoliberals. I would say it's because they're more conservative or libertarian in their economic views, and they don't view that as the role of the court to step in and go, okay, AT&T, you can't merge with Sprint.
Well, yeah, that you're right at the beginning. That's a definition point, because I just based on what you said, I think maybe you and I would I don't know if how you would define neoliberal, but for me, a neoliberal would essentially be somebody who is and forgive me for butchering this Latin term, I think it's Latin, laissez-faire, somebody who's for laissez-faire capitalism, or a libertarian. You know, I don't. Whenever I use the word liberal, I'm usually using it in reference to libertarianism or the classical sense. I don't like the American definition of liberal, because I approach politics from a more European perspective sometimes, I know, but that's just a definition issue there. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, ultimately where I see this going, you know, and we're assuming that Trump gets his pick through, or that he chooses a pretty conservative nominee that makes it through. I think ultimately where the court goes is going to be in Roberts' ballpark, because he is showing at times that he's cognizant of the impacts of the court's rulings, most notably him voting to uphold Obamacare over maybe how the public would view the court. But he's also showing that he's not afraid to buck that and vote like a traditional conservative on issues like Heller and issues like Citizens United and what's the other big one I'm thinking of? And something like Janus. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see. I'm most interested beyond just the ideological perspective of where Kennedy wants to take the court, because most likely he's going to chart its direction in the future. And he's not given me the best hope as a conservative that he's always going to make those rulings in the way that I want him to, which is why I say I don't think that he'd ever overturn gay marriage or Roe v. Wade. Because I think if he would have been willing to, or we were going to see that from this current court, that he would have done something much more significant than he's done to date.
Here is a question for you that popped into my mind as we were discussing this. Do you think, and this is for you, Gabe, or anybody else, just I know I've been calling on Gabe a lot tonight, but that's just because my frame of mind has been so much influenced by his article on it that he's the one that's come to mind. But do you think we will see from the Democrats, and I'm not saying whether or not I think it would realistically happen, I don't think it would, but do you think we'll see them start suggesting maybe term limiting or age limiting justices in an attempt to try and undercut the lasting impact that Trump's nominations could have?
I don't see that happening. However, what I have noticed is, I think it was Washington Post or HuffPost recently suggested if somehow the Democrats get control of the Senate next year and Congress, that there is the potential and there is it is allowed in the Constitution that there can be up to 11 Supreme Court justices. So what they could potentially do if that happened, although highly unlikely, is that even though right now we would have a 5-4 majority, if they were to do that and increase it to 11 spots and then stack two more liberals in there, that would give them a 6-5 majority over us. So that's one of the possibilities, although unlikely, that could potentially happen.
I don't see them winning the Senate, but that's just because I'm influenced by Gabe's articles. Basically a shill for Gabe tonight. Right. That's what it is.
Well, no, I mean, they could. I mean, Adam's, I think, referring to the stacking the court that FDR tried to do and successfully did for a little bit until he went the way of the dinosaurs. So, I mean, it's an interesting possibility. I don't know if it would happen. I mean, I think the Supreme Court is going to be conservative for a generation. And if in my conversations with my circle of more liberal progressive friends, is it in the indication that's what scares them the most, is they know that any crazy scheme they come up with to stop this is not going to stop it. I mean, ultimately, we're looking at a sea change on the Supreme Court, and you can definitely bet that if Trump wins re-election, that Ginsburg is not going to hold on for another 6 or 7 years. Then everything comes crashing down for them, because then you've got 4 more years of Trump also appointing district judges, appellate court judges, state appellate court judges. I mean, their house basically tumbles down.
I just want to remind our viewers that Justice Ginsburg is 85 years old. She was born in 1933.
And I just want to remind our viewers too
that we are not advocating for anything either.
No, we're not advocating, but no, all I would say to that too is I would also remind our viewers, as Dennis Miller tweeted this week, that anger does amazing things, and it can keep elderly people alive for a very long period of time. So I mean, Ginsburg might be around for a while just based on her hatred of Trump, if nothing else.
I saw when I Googled just now to find her age that the press is doing everything they can to make her look like she's young and vital. The top story that showed up was from Yahoo News saying there's a photo of her planking going viral. I was like, what the hell?
At this point, Josh, and I'm being realistic here, she might outlive Hillary Clinton for all we know. So
I'll put a bet on that. I'll bet that she'll outlive Hillary.
Well, it's just a fact that Hillary Clinton cannot die until she's been elected president. She'll just keep running over and over again until until she gets her shot in there. But
so what you're saying is I'll be close to 90, I'll be 90 years old, and she'll still be running even when I'm 90.
Pretty well, yeah. I think she'll do it one more time. She's just the gift that keeps on giving. I saw today she said, "I'm not going anywhere."
Right. Well, and I think it's interesting. You guys remember that spat she had with Trump over during the election. I mean, she literally behaved like a politician, and it's interesting. I'm not a judicial expert by any means, but I actually have read some of the opinions that have been written, especially this term, where you had a bunch of 5-4 decisions over things that favor conservatives, like Janus, the Planned Parenthood case the pregnancy center case in California, where the dissents from those justices, including Ginsburg, were pretty astonishing. I mean, they were literally basically saying that you can use the power of government to basically make anybody do whatever you want the government to do. So I think there's an actual effect on the court where the liberals are being driven further to the left, even as the conservatives on the court don't move.
So as I've said multiple times that I have not followed too closely, but can you give me an example on one of these dissents from Ginsburg, or can you elaborate a little bit further on just how far out there she was going? Or I'm just curious now.
Well, it's not, I'm picking on Ginsburg, but I mean, the others on the court agreed with her, maybe not in the same opinion, but they all dissented from whatever the majority ruling was. But I mean, for example, in the case of the pregnancy clinic in California, and if any of the viewers watching don't know about it, there was a case in California where pregnancy clinics were required to put that they're not medically licensed, or that they don't provide abortion services, even though everybody says abortion services are safe, da 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 da. So the conservatives, including Kennedy on the court, said, you can't do that. You're compelling free speech. You're basically telling them, you're making them say something they don't believe, which, you can correlate with the gay marriage case in Colorado. The dissent from Ginsburg and the liberals on the court basically boiled down to, we can use the power of government to make you say whatever we want you to say, because their interpretation basically was free speech. The First Amendment is embedded in every aspect of life in America, which means that the government can regulate it and can make you say what you want them to say, as long as the government has a compelling interest in it. Which I mean, if you take that to its fullest extent, basically means that the government can say, you can't say that broccoli is bad for you because it's a public health interest. And your free speech rights, your First Amendment rights, are overridden by the fact that the government has a compelling interest to basically curtail that.
So basically,
you got me there. My efforts in the broccoli lobby have...
Well, that's just an example.
I'm sorry. I thought that was funny. But...
The ultimate irony of it is, it might have been that case or another one where Ginsburg basically said, and it was specifically Ginsburg said in her dissent, the court's conservatives have basically weaponized the First Amendment. And I believe that was either the Janus ruling or the Masterpiece Cake Shop ruling, when in reality, what the court's liberals want to do is weaponize the First Amendment by basically saying that government interests overweigh the First Amendment.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I mean,
look, if your First Amendment rights to say what you want are view are interpreted within the sphere of it's integrated into every aspect of society, which it is. That's not disagreeable. But if it's interpreted then as in the government then has the right to come in and regulate it because it's involved in everything in society, you're basically saying there's no check on the on what the government can do. I mean, because ultimately you take that full circle, the government then basically has an excuse to get involved in every aspect of your life.
My internet connection cut out there. I only caught the last part of what you were saying.
Well, I could repeat it, but basically it Ginsburg and the other liberals on the court who have joined her in all these dissents this term basically have staked out their turf that no matter what happens with the Kennedy pick, they are firmly judicially on the left and they're not moving.
I think
I read the other day that this Supreme Court, this term at least, had the most 5-4 decisions in 40 or 50 years. I think we just lost Sam.
Oh my God, he's gone. I didn't notice. I was looking away from my screen. Well, Jeff, it's all right. We still have three. He'll be back. I'll be honest. I was afraid that I was going to drop out like that because we've had a thunderstorm going on here, but I've done pretty well. Since we've lost Sam and we've been going at it for a while, does anybody have anything extra to say or can I close this out? No, he's back in.
No, he's back.
I am back in. Sorry. I don't know why this keeps happening, but my internet keeps crapping out. I made a joke on my podcast when it happened. I think the Russians are trying to hack my internet.
I can assure you, Sam, I've done nothing to your internet.
Nobody
stabbed your phones.
We'll tell the rest of your friends from the KGB to leave me alone. I know you're not doing anything, but what about
it's the FSB now, but yes.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So, yeah, tell your goons in the FSB to lay off me. But no, Gabe, I did catch what you were saying. So I mean I guess the one thing I will say is I'm not really surprised that Ginsburg, you know, and are shifting ideologically to the left. I will say this, at least they're being honest about it. So finally.
Well, and it's interesting. I mean, from taking this just to the political angle one final time, it's interesting now that it's not that it's become crystal clear whether you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, whatever, that Supreme Court nominations now are as political as anything else. Which we kind of all knew they were, and they've been that way for a long time. It's just kind of now we're actually seeing it.
Yeah. Well, I think.
Oh, go ahead, Josh. I mean, Sam, sorry.
Well, I mean, I think a large part of that is because, like everything else, everything is, you know, everything is 10 times bigger because of social media. We're getting everything in real time now, you know, almost instantaneously on our phones, you know,
I'm going to slightly disagree with you, Sam. I do agree that it's because of the social media, but I would say it's because people are starting to, and again, this is going more into the political realm, but I've complained and people have complained for years that there's been no real difference between the political parties for several decades, at least in terms, especially of economics, but to some extent, even, you know, what we've essentially had is we've had two liberal parties. We've had one party of market liberals, and then we've had one party of social liberals. And as we are going through what I believe is a political realignment, we're beginning to see some hostility between the two sides again. And so everything's becoming political because the the ball is up in the air, so to speak, and everybody's trying to scramble and catch it before it comes down again, if that makes sense.
And to your point, Josh, I mean, it's the Supreme Court. The thing that's interesting about the Supreme Court is that this is the one thing that separates the parties, because we're not talking about economic issues. Yes, the Supreme Court makes economic decisions, but those aren't the primary decisions they make. They make decisions on things like guns, on the Second Amendment, the First Amendment, religious rights, abortion. Those are the things that actually divide the parties. I mean, the cultural and social and religious issues that are the divisions in America right now that are reflected in the parties. And that is what a lot of the Supreme Court cases that have been the most divisive have been on.
Have I lost touch with you guys? Are you still there?
No, I'm still here. I have two screenshots of Sam.
I was afraid. Oh no, Sam is okay. We did lose Sam.
I'm back again. I'm back again. Boy,
I do want to say, and I don't want to rush us through this, but Sam, as far as I know, you're the only guy who knows how to take us off the air. If you're not here, I have no idea what to do after that.
I am, and if you guys want to wrap, you know, we can. It's almost 10:30, so you know, I think that these podcasts at like an hour and a half are pretty good. So you know, especially if we're doing it weekly. So
right, and I didn't mean to drag us on. Just to kind of back up your point, Josh.
Right.
No, yeah. I would reply a little bit more, but I'm just afraid about losing Sam before again.
Yeah, no. I think we're good now. The FSB isn't, you know, tracking me. Hopefully, so. But I mean, I will say this in conclusion. I think we might have to have like kind of a sequel show to this episode, you know, whenever the Supreme Court nomination actually does go through. I think right now we're kind of, I think it's pretty safe to say that we're all basing this off of theory and speculation. And, you know, for the most part, at least, and until we actually get some, you know, real good, until this thing actually happens, and when Trump makes this decision, I think we'll definitely need to revisit it. So, you know.
Well, you guys have heard that he's going to make his choice somewhere around July 9th.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, I believe
on July 16th, he'll be meeting with President Putin. But.
Oh.
Maybe.
That's my next. That's I'm hoping that's our next episode. I was hoping to do foreign policy tonight, but then you know Kennedy retired in the middle of the week, and that plan went out the window. But
maybe he can tell Putin to tell the FSB to, you know, stop messing around with my internet. So, but you know, I think at the very least, maybe next week, we can revisit this at least a little bit, you know, in part one, Trump makes his decision. But, you know, next week, I think it's Gabe's turn to run the show. So.
Well, and I'll make Josh happy. It will probably be over foreign policy.
Okay. Yeah. So.
He knows the FSB will come after his internet. if he doesn't.
For those of you who may be either watching this later or listening, we kind of have like a running joke that Josh is our Soviet / Russian sympathizer.
I admit I'm pro-Russia, and I've been open about my dealings and business contacts with the United Russia Party and the Kremlin, but there's nothing wrong with promoting an alternative viewpoint. That's our First Amendment right, ladies and gentlemen.
So you're basically Raymond Reddington from The Blacklist, then?
Yes.
Yeah. I, I've never actually seen that show, but you guys will have to tell me about this after we go off air now.
Yeah, we will. So, and on that note, ladies and gentlemen, I think that pretty much wraps up this episode. So thank you for tuning in, and thank you personally for putting up with all my internet glitches, both on my own podcast and this one tonight. I'm going to try and get that fixed before next week, obviously. If any of you guys have anything that you want to promote, now would be the chance. Obviously, you want to go check out our website, AmericanWatchman.org. And if you haven't already, go to anchor.fm/Whitfield Report and basically subscribe to the audio podcast there on either Apple Podcasts or any of that, the other platforms we're listed on. I think we just got picked up by Apple Podcasts, and we also got picked up by Google last week too, and that was just on our first episode, so that's pretty good already. But obviously go and visit American Watchman, and also you can check out my website at thesamwhitfield.com, and that's pretty much all the plugs I have. So Josh,
if you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at RussianBotJJ. Beyond that, just visit our website and the podcast. That's all I really have for plugs. Gabe or Adam, you got anything before we head off?
I don't.
No.
No plugs or anything? All right, then. So, all right, folks. Well, we'll see you next week at around 9:05 p.m. Eastern. Same bat time, same bat channel, and thank you for watching. God bless, and God save this great nation.